Rusty Shannon stood on the bottom rung of the corral fence, studying three riders approaching from the north. He recognized James Monahan, Evan Gifford, and Len Tanner. He couldn't see Andy. He blinked in an effort to sharpen his sight, but still, he saw only the three. Dread built a knot in his stomach. Josie Monahan climbed up beside him.
What are you looking at?
Riders coming. Your brother James, Evan, and Len.
Oh, what about Billy and Andy?
I don't see them.
Oh!
Josie glanced back toward her sister's house. Geneva sat in a rocking chair on the dog run, rocking the baby girl.
She's gone half crazy with worry and grief. Well, at least Evan is coming back. Maybe that'll help.
Rusty had watched Geneva waste away. He knew she had eaten but little, and he doubted that she had slept much. She clung to the baby as if the girl were the only family left to her. She had drained herself of tears. Now her eyes were dry and hollow and haunted.
I'd better go tell Geneva and Mama.
Rusty watched her move away toward her sister.
What about Andy?
He wouldn't come back with us. He's still out there somewhere looking.
I gotta see my wife.
She's over by the house with her sister. Find any trace of the boy?
We saw Indian sign, but there was no way to tell if they still had Billy or not.
I don't see how you could have let Andy stay up there by himself.
He wasn't by himself. Met some Comancheros. They're out looking, see if they can make a trade with some of the Monahan horses.
But Andy's just a boy himself.
Maybe you ain't paid enough attention to him lately. He don't act like a boy when he's got his mind made up. Said he was going to find Billy however long it took.
You still ought to have stopped him.
Tell you the truth, I don't think we could have. He feels like it's his fault Billy got taken. Another thing, he can go places the rest of us can. If anybody's to find Billy, it'll be him.
I hope he's safe then. Did you see Captain Burmeister anywhere?
Not since he turned back.
He went out again. As soon as his men got a little rest, supplies, and some fresh horses. God knows where he is.
I'm surprised you didn't go with him.
I don't have the strength to keep up on a hard ride. I'd be a millstone around everybody's neck. And somebody needed to be here besides Preacher Webb and Macy in case some Comanches or Kiowas decided to pay another visit.
Rusty watched Geneva and the baby return to their cabin. Evan had an arm around his wife's shoulder. Rusty ached for all of them. He could imagine the hell Evan had endured in the futile search for his son, the heartbreak he must have suffered in turning back.
I ought to be out there with him.
You'd never make it past the first Comanche camp, but he will. He's got enough Indian in him.
Captain Burmeister returned in a couple of days with his little group of frontier guards. He was painfully frustrated, men and horses weary, dried out, and hungry.
It is hopeless. Of water there is not enough. It will never be a country for white men, not while we live.
There is water. Otherwise, the Indians couldn't stay.
But only the Indian knows where it is.
Tanner was telling me about running across some ox cart traders out of New Mexico. Looks like they know how to find water. Someday, somebody will start marking the water holes and the trails. Once it's done, that country won't be a mystery anymore. There won't be any place safe for Comanches to hide.
Someday. But it is for now that we must worry. We know so little and we are so few.
Captain, could you use another man?
As in times past? Before the fools on both sides carried us into war?
Like then. I realize it's not quite the same as the old-time Rangers, and I know I'll be a while getting my full strength back, but I feel like there's things I can do to make myself useful.
But you have your own home, far from here.
Not anymore. I've been carpet-bagged out of it. I need to stay up in this part of the country for now, but I don't want to keep being a burden to the Monahans.
I see. And you, Private Tanner, what of you?
Why the hell not? When I was a ranger, I went hungry half the time and I never got paid what they promised me. It was the best years of my life.
I cannot guarantee you will be paid this time. In Austin, promises are many, but the well is often dry.
Something you ought to know, Captain, before you swear me in. There's a charge against me down home. It's a false charge, but it's on the books just the same.
Not murder, I hope?
Oh, nothing like that. I'm charged with aiding and abetting the escape of a criminal, but I never did it. He took one of my horses without me knowing it. They claim I gave it to him.
They?
Two brothers by the name of Oldham. During the war, they hid out in the brush. I had some trouble with them.
They did not serve in the Confederate Army.
Nor the Union Army either. But now they're state police.
Do not worry about the state police. They are some good men, but also some rotten apples. They have no authority over my company.
You what?
Well, I can't stay here just doing nothing.
But you have a home here as long as you want it.
It's your home, not mine.
But it could be your home. You could be one of us.
The Monahans have been the nearest thing to family that I've had since Daddy Mike and Mother Dora. There's not a family anywhere that I'd rather be a part of.
I've always hoped that you and me...
I know. If I was in a shape for marrying, you're the one I'd ask. But I'd have nothing to offer you now. Not so much as a roof over your head or a plot of ground for a garden. And there's Billy out yonder somewhere, and Andy. I can't be thinking of making a home till that's all settled.
What do you think you can do?
Ride, watch, listen. Maybe somewhere out there I'll find something or hear something. I don't know what. And I won't know till it happens.
She took his hand.
When the job is done, you know where I'll be.
Burmeister had set up his base camp several miles from the Monahan place. On the way there, Rusty was aware that Burmeister watched him with a critical eye.
Hello, privates. You're tired.
I'm doing better than I thought I might.
We will not push you too hard, not at first.
I'll tote my share of the load.
You always did. Always you were a good man on patrol. There was not much you did not see.
You're wanting me to go on scout?
Tomorrow, and only as far as you feel strong. Take Private Tanner with you. Look for sign of Indians, but do not engage. Come back and report.
Yes, sir. There's nobody I'd rather have with me than Tanner. Even if he does sometimes talk till my ears hurt.
The camp had reminded him of earlier times, before and during the war, when he had served with the Rangers in the Fort Belknap country. Burmeister maintained a loose form of military discipline and routine that lent at least some structure to each day. Rusty studied the men, quietly trying to assess their potential. He found that most had escaped Confederate service, a couple of them by going to Mexico, a couple more by serving in the Union Army. One or two he suspected of having been brushmen, hiding out from conscription officers. That did not necessarily brand them in his view. James Monahan had done it. On the other hand, so had the Oldham brothers. Rusty guessed that his first day's ride with Tanner covered about 20 miles, about as much as he could expect while watching the ground for tracks. The last few miles set his shoulder to throbbing and aggravated an old leg pain from his long-ago arrow wound.
You're looking a little peaked.
It's your eyes. I'm just fine.
Well, I'm tired if you're not. I say it's time to make camp. Got to think of the horses.
The ride had not been long enough to tax the horses unduly. Rusty appreciated that Tanner was watching out for his welfare without making an issue of it. They stopped at a small seep he remembered from scouting trips long ago. The seep fed a narrow creek, its water trailing for a couple of hundred yards before disappearing into the sand. Along the creek's short course, a thin band of green grass offered grazing for the horses. Rusty and Tanner staked their mounts with long, rawhide riatas that gave the animals considerable freedom to move around.
Just like old times. The horses are getting fed better than we are. I can imagine the good supper Clemmy Monahan is serving tonight.
Our jerky'll do just fine. Andy may not have even that much to eat.
Yeah, he can get by on lizards and rattlesnakes if he has to. He's that much Comanche.
If I just had a notion where he's at, any notion at all...
You go there and lose that red hair before it has a chance to start getting gray.
The only horse tracks he and Tanner had seen all day had been remnants of old ones headed north. They found no sign of recent Indian incursion. Years ago, under the old, loose Frontier Ranger organization, the men had scouted along established north-south lines a little beyond the settlements, riding until they met scouts coming from counterpart camps. At that point, they turned back and rerode the same line. The system had worked well so long as the frontier companies had manpower enough. Some Indian raids were broken up before they were well started. The system had become less and less effective as the war drew men away from the frontier and the ranger companies. Rusty knew Captain Burmeister lacked men enough to make the routine work as well as it once had. Intercepting Indians would be as much a matter of luck, of being at the right place at the right time, as of organization.
This ought to be the job of the United States Army, but them generals don't see Indians as a serious problem.
They're mostly staying back in the settled parts of the state where Indians aren't a problem. They spend most of their time looking for Confederate conspiracies.
Well, I've learned one thing for damn sure.
What's that?
Don't ever lose a war. It don't pay.
They were within sight of the camp when one of the scouts rode out to intercept them. His expression indicated that he was not the bearer of good news.
Captain Burmeister wanted me to let you know you've got company waiting for you.
Who is it?
A couple of brothers. I don't recall the name. The younger one has just got one arm.
The Oldhams. I've wondered how long it would take them to figure out where I'm at. Did the captain say what he wants me to do?
No, just said he didn't want you riding in unawares.
You take Clyde. I'll take Buddy Boy. We can put an end to him once and for all.
I don't want us to kill anybody. Also, their state police.
Damned poor recommendation.
There's a third man with them. Deputy of some kind, I think.
Let's go. We've got Burmeister on our side, so let's hope cooler heads prevail. Lead the way.
The Oldham brothers and the deputy waited outside Burmeister's tent, their stance stiff and expectant. Burmeister and two of his men stood nearby, watching them. Tanner's rifle lay across the pommel of his saddle, ready.
I expected you a lot sooner, Clyde.
Oh, it ain't that we didn't try. You're a hard man to locate.
Now that you've found me, what do you figure on doing?
We come to arrest you.
If you plan on shooting me in the back again, you've come a long ways on a fool's errand. I'm not going with you.
That true?
Keep those hands where I can see them, Clyde.
Hey, easy there. I'm just going after my warrant.
See that that's all you go after.
Buddy Oldham dropped his hand to the butt of a pistol on his hip, but made no effort to draw the weapon. He stared into the muzzle of Tanner's rifle.
Better raise that hand, Buddy, or this time you're liable to lose more than your arm.
Buddy lifted his hand clear, his eyes flashing anger.
This here's a warrant for...
I will read that, if you please.
I come to serve it on Shannon.
I am commanding officer here. I will read it first.
Here.
Huh. This judge, his name is not known to me. How am I to know this document is real?
It's got the court seal on it.
Perhaps it is real, perhaps it is not. You will tell me about the charges against Private Shannon.
Private Shannon?
He is a member of my company. Therefore, he is an officer of the state, as you claim to be. My authority as captain is superior to yours. He will go or not go as I choose.
Authority? You sound like some kind of a Dutchman. Me and my brother don't have to take orders from no foreigner.
I fought for this country already before you were born. Private Shannon tells me you spent the last war hiding in the brush. You fought for nobody.
It weren't our war. We had no stake in either side.
And now you wear a badge that is too big for you and swear out charges against those from whom you would steal.
We ain't stole nothing.
You have taken Private Shannon's land, have you not?
He owed back taxes. I paid him fair and legal.
I do wonder where you got that money. And once before you have arrested him, you shot him in the back.
He tried to escape.
So you claim. It is an excuse as old as Pharaoh.
If you let them take Rusty, he'll never get halfway home. They'll kill him.
So we will put the boot on another foot. Mr. Oldham, if it is your will to take him, I do not prevent you, but I will send Private Tanner and some of my other men as escort. If you make any move to kill him, any move whatever.
Don't let them scare you, Clyde.
They do scare me. It's us who wouldn't live to get back. They'd kill us sure as hell. He'd just say we tried to shoot Shannon.
Possibly so. But is that not what you had planned for Private Shannon?
Clyde Oldham had the trapped look of an animal hemmed into a corner.
Hey! Ain't we gonna take him? Look what he done! Look at my stump! He left me half a man! You swore to me, Clyde. You swore we'd kill him for that!
Shut up, Buddy. You don't see what we're up against.
I see you're giving up. After we rode all this way, after we've been chased by Indians and everything, you're fixing to turn around and leave him.
Sometimes you get dealt a bad hand. You fold and wait for a better deal. So this time the pot is yours, Shannon. But the game ain't over.
It ain't no game to me, Clyde. I never wanted to shoot your brother. He forced it on me.
Thanks for the farm, Shannon. It's a good one.
Don't be liking it too much. One way or another, I'll get it back.
Oh, come visit any time. We'll be looking for you.
I didn't expect them to give up that easy.
They ain't giving up. You'll be seeing them again.
This horse is tired and sweaty. I'm gonna water him and brush him down.
He led the horse to a makeshift corral. He pulled the saddle off. The blanket dropped and he bent down to pick it up.
Ah! Oh, what the?
Get down, Rusty!
Burmeister and his scouts quickly covered Buddy and the deputy with their firearms. Rusty felt points of fire in his face. Clyde's shot had driven splinters into his skin. He reached up and felt the warm stickiness of blood on his fingers. Bent low in the saddle, Clyde was spurring away, his boots flailing in his horse's ribs, his shirt tail standing out behind him. His hat blew off, but he didn't slow down. Buddy was right behind him.
Hold fire!
Tanner watched the Oldham's desperate flight with disgust.
I had my sights on Clyde, right between the shoulder blades. Getting where I can't shoot worth a damn anymore.
Rusty pulled at a splinter that had pierced his cheek. It burned as if it had been set afire. Burmeister ran to Rusty's side.
You bleed. He hit you?
Just splinters. They'll come out. Thanks, Lynn. If he'd had time for a second shot, he'd have killed me, sure.
That's what I'm paid so high for.
The horse tracks were easy for Andy to follow. This far up in their plain stronghold, the raiders had no reason to try to cover them. Their direction gave him a strong clue about the destination. He remembered a place where his band had camped several times, a location that offered water enough and trees for shade and shelter from the wind. To look less like a white man, he had shed his hat, shirt, and long underwear, keeping only his trousers and the moccasins. The rest he tied behind the cantle. He remembered the time soon after he fell back into Texan hands that his uncle, Jim Pickard, had come to have a look at him. The uncle had rejected him because he considered him a savage beyond redemption. He ought to get a look at me now, Andy thought. The camp was where he expected it to be. As before, he approached the horse herd first, looking for Billy's pony or Vince Purdy's mount. And again, he was disappointed. He rode into camp with all the boldness he could muster, trying not to show any sign of his nagging concern that some of Tonkawa Killer's friends might be here. He saw a few faces he remembered, though they stared at him without recognition. He had grown, and his features had matured since he had been with the Texans. The camp people met him with both curiosity and suspicion, for they were not prepared to see a white-skinned young man come among them of his own accord.
Hello there.
You speak in our tongue, and yet...
I am of your people. Wolf Eyes, do you not remember me? Steals the Ponies is my brother. I was known as Badger Boy.
I remember you well, Badger Boy. Come. Come and eat. There is plenty.
I shall. But first, do you know where I might find my brother?
He left here yesterday and went north with his family. They joined some others who came back from a raid against the Texans.
A raid?
Yes. I went myself. We took many horses.
And scalps?
Ah, only one. An old man we found.
No one else?
We took a small boy. Fights with Bears was the leader. He claimed the boy and the horses. I took second coup on the old man, but I only got this.
He lifted a watch that hung around his neck on a leather thong along with his medicine bag. Its case looked like silver. It was Vince Purdy's.
May I see it?
Wolf Eyes lifted the thong from around his neck.
It is of little use. It is but a pretty trinket.
Andy clasped the watch with reverence, as if somehow it contained the spirit of Vince Purdy. In his mind's eye, he visualized the kind old gentleman, and his throat tightened. This keepsake would mean much to the Monahans if he lived to return it to them. He saw that it had run down. Evidently, its new owner did not know to wind it. He would not have understood the white man's concept of time anyway. Andy started to wind it, but changed his mind.
What will you do with it?
I may give it to my wife's father. He is old and becoming foolish. He likes things that shine.
Would you trade it to me?
What do you have to offer?
A white man hat. It will keep the sun from your head in summer and snow from your head in winter.
Not enough.
A white man's shirt. It will help protect you when the cold winds blow.
My father-in-law would not like those. They do not shine.
The saddle, then. The white man's saddle is comfortable. It will not rub sores on your legs.
Nothing about the saddle was fancy. It was plain, its seat slick from long use. Someone had already ridden it for years before Rusty had acquired it for Andy. The Comanche rubbed his hands over it, his eyes shining with delight.
I did want the old man's saddle, but fights with bears would not give it up. Yes, we trade.
Andy wondered if the watch would still run, but he did not wind it. Its ticking might give his host second thoughts. He put it around his neck.
You mentioned a boy. What became of him?
Fights with bears took him north. He has not decided whether to keep him to raise as a slave or to kill him. The boy has caused him much trouble. Fights with bears is not a man of much patience.
Good for Billy, Andy thought. The more fight he showed, the better his chance of surviving. Andy remembered that when he had first been taken, he had been subjected to heavy abuse. He realized later that he was being tested for his prospects as a warrior. Had he not kept fighting back, he might have been killed.
Was my brother on the raid with you?
No. Fights with bears was the leader. He and Steele's the ponies do not like one another.
Thank you, but I must go. The longer I wait, the further my brother may travel.
Stay here. With families, they move slowly. You could start with the morning's light and catch them before the sun sleeps again.
Andy had another potential problem to consider. He had not seen everyone in this camp, nor had everyone seen him. A friend of Tonkawa Killer might yet recognize him.
I can ride far before the sun sleeps.
To replace the saddle, Andy obtained a rawhide rope to loop behind the horse's shoulders. He could tuck his knees beneath it to hold him steady should he encounter rough traveling. Except for his trousers, he left his white man clothing behind in return for the hospitality.
Take some food for your journey. I would not like to see you suffer hunger on your way.
Thank you. May friendly spirits ride with you.
The trail had been as plain as a white man's wagon road, beaten out not only by horses, but by teepee poles lashed together to form travois. Andy could have followed it at a lope in the dark, but he did not want to push Long Red. He might have to depend upon the horse's stamina if circumstances called for a hard run. Andy had passed by the horse herd, recognizing Billy's pony and Purdy's horse standing together near the outer edge, like two old acquaintances thrown unwillingly among strangers. He saw a woman cooking meat over an open fire in front of a teepee. She was Steele's the pony's wife. Seeing no other woman with her, he assumed she was still the only one. Two children, a boy and a girl, played nearby. He approached slowly, not wanting to startle her. She looked up at him without recognition.
Do you not know me?
I do not believe so.
I am Badger Boy.
She almost turned over the meat pot. She embraced him, then stood back for a better look.
I can see now. But you are much changed. You were a boy. Now you are a man.
I have come to see my brother.
He scouts for buffalo. He should be here soon.
The boy and girl had stopped their play to stare at him in curiosity.
These are yours?
Yes. Before winter, there will be another. Look, Steals the ponies comes. Say nothing. See if he recognizes you.
Andy's heartbeat quickened. The passage of years had not changed the way his brother sat on his horse. Andy could have recognized him from far away. Steele's the ponies did not seem to notice the visitor at first. He dismounted, obviously tired, and tied his horse behind the teepee. He carried his medicine shield inside, for it was a sacred thing to be protected from harm. Coming back outside, he faced his wife.
I am hungry.
The meat is soon ready. Look, someone has come to see you.
Steele's the ponies stared blankly a moment. Then his eyes brightened and the weariness fell away.
Badger Boy? Badger Boy is no longer a fit name for you. You are not a boy.
Among the Texans, I am known as Andy.
Andy? It means nothing.
We must find you a new name. Something better. You should not be here. Have you forgotten why you left us? Why you had to go back and live with the Texans?
I have not forgotten. I remember the one who was killed. I had hoped none of his friends are in this camp.
They come and they go. One is here. Do you remember Fights with Bears?
I have heard the name spoken lately, but I do not remember him.
Come, we will go inside. We would not want him to see you.
You believe he would still want me dead?
His wives are sisters of the one who was killed.
After entering, Andy waited until his brother sat, leaning against a backrest. Then he seated himself.
When you left, we agreed you should never come back. Why are you here again?
I have come looking for a boy. He is the son of people who have been good to me. I am told he was taken by Fights with Bears. I have come to take him back to his family.
You have come far and risked your life for nothing. You want too much. Fights with Bears has claimed the boy for his own. He will not give him up.
Perhaps he would trade for horses? I know of a trader.
He already has many horses. If you brought him more, he would probably take them, kill you, and keep the boy. He listens to bad spirits, that one.
Andy didn't know what else to propose for trade. He did not know how much money the Monahans might have. It was unlikely Fights with Bears had much concept of money's value anyway. Comanches understood goods, something they could hold in their hands, something they could use. Coins were of value only for ornamentation, and paper money was worth nothing at all.
What can I do?
Go back to the Texans. You belong among them now. Forget about the boy. Tell them he is dead.
His family are my friends. They weep for him.
If they are young, they can have other children.
It will not be the same. Texans love their children, just as the people do.
Fights with Bears would not even talk to you.
Then I will steal the boy in the night.
Steals the ponies stared at Andy in disbelief.
Your Texas friends are too far away. He would catch you and kill you. He might be angry enough to kill the boy.
I have traveled many days to find Billy. Now that I know where he is, I cannot turn away from him. It is a matter of honor.
Andy's brother sat in silence a long time, his face an expressionless mask. But Andy imagined he could see the mind hard at work behind half-closed eyes. He could sense the internal struggle.
You talk of your honor. If I helped you do this thing, I would lose my own honor. I would betray my people.
Not all the people. Just Fights with Bears. You said you do not like him.
There might be a way, but the spirits must be with you. You could die if they are not.
What is the way?
I have not thought it all through. We will talk of it later. Now I must move your horse so Fights with Bears will not see him and wonder.
I do not want to place you in danger. This is the thing I should do by myself.
Fights with Bears would not kill me, and I would not kill him. We are bound together by the blood of the people. But you are not of our blood, and neither is the boy. He would kill you both. So I will help you.
Steele's ponies was gone a while. His wife was in and out of the teepee several times. Andy could sense that she was curious, but she asked no questions. The two children came inside and stared silently at Andy without approaching too closely. He wanted to tell them he was their uncle, but he decided against it. They might tell other children later, and word might find its way to Fights with Bears. He would know that Steals the Ponies was somehow involved in Billy's liberation, if it worked.
What do we do now?
We rest. We wait. We can do nothing until Fights with Bears and his family are asleep.
Do you know for certain where Billy is?
He is in their lodge. They keep him tied because he tries to run away. I wonder about his intelligence. Even if he were to escape and not be found, by himself he would soon starve. The boy does not reason well.
He has the stubborn will of the Monahans.
Monahans?
They're a family. They have much in common with the Comanches.
That was explanation enough for Steals the Ponies.
Sleep now. You will have little time for it later. You have far to travel.
So much was running through Andy's mind, he did not expect to sleep at all. However, when his brother shook his shoulder gently to awaken him, he was surprised to see that it was dark outside.
It will soon be time. You must eat now.
I am nervous. I am not hungry.
No. You will need strength. Eat.
Andy forced himself to down the leftover meat from the previous evening.
I have been to the lodge of Fights with Bears. His children are there. It will be difficult for me to crawl into the lodge without arousing the family.
No. If you are caught, you would be banished. Your whole family would be outcasts. It is for me to do, and me alone.
I am pleased to see that you have much courage. I would be more pleased if I saw that you were also blessed with much judgment.
Do you know where the boy will be sleeping?
I have seen him tied to a lodge pole.
Steals the ponies picked up a stick and drew a circle in the sand to represent the interior of a teepee. He pointed out the front flap, then moved the point of the stick around the perimeter and stabbed it into the ground.
This is where I have seen him. I suspect the other children are placed around him at night to make it difficult for him to escape.
Once I have freed him, what then?
I will have two horses for you. The sorrel on which you came and another for the boy.
What about his pony?
It will not travel fast enough. I have other use for the pony and the tracks it makes.
I do not understand.
I will take another horse and lead the pony southward. That is the direction fights with bears would expect. I will leave a clear trail. When I have misled him far enough, my trail will disappear. I will circle back to camp while he is still looking for my tracks.
But south is where I need to go with the boy.
Not at first. You will ride eastward in the creek, where you will not leave a trail. You must travel far before you leave the creek.
That would put us into settlements a long way east of where the boy's family lives.
But east from where fights with bears will be looking for you.
Andy could see flaws in his brother's plan, but it was better than anything he'd been able to think up. It had all the marks of the trickster, the coyote. Much depended upon Andy's being able to get the boy out of the teepee without arousing the family. Beyond that, much depended upon being able to fool fights with bears.
I hope he is not very smart.
He has been in many battles. Not one has he lost.
The moon provided light enough for Andy to see that the teepee skins were rolled up a foot or so from the bottom to allow fresh air to pass through. He would be able to crawl in where he chose, rather than have to enter through the front flap and feel his way around. He looked behind him, but could not see Steelers the ponies. He had the comfort of faith that his brother was back there somewhere, holding two pairs of horses. Andy lay on his stomach at the teepee's edge, waiting for his eyes to adjust. He could not get near anybody inside. His skin prickled with impatience. He began to drag himself forward slowly, trying to make no sound. Andy froze. The largest shape moved. It had to be fights with bears. He was lying on his back after having lain on his side for a while. Next to him lay one of his wives. Andy sought out the second wife. She lay among the children. It took him some time to be sure which of the other dark lumps was Billy. He was almost in front of Andy. The boy's hands were tied above his head, a leather thong binding them to a teepee pole. He lay with his feet together. Andy suspected they were also bound. Billy stirred restlessly. He appeared to be asleep, but Andy knew he could not be comfortable with his hands lashed above his head. If startled, he was likely to cry out and awaken the family. Andy dragged himself inside the teepee just far enough to reach Billy. Gripping his knife in a cold, sweaty hand, he cut the thong attached to the pole. His hands suddenly free, Billy brought them down in reflex and opened his eyes in surprise. Andy clamped a hand over Billy's mouth before the boy could do more than grunt. Billy stared wildly at him for a few seconds and fought to pull free.
Shh!
Billy calmed. Andy removed the hand and crooked his finger, silently beckoning. He began backing out of the teepee. Hands and feet still tied, Billy wriggled after him. They began crawling back, inches at a time. Billy came along after him. It seemed an hour before the boy was out of the teepee. Finally, the crisp night air filled his nose.
Stay still and quiet. Do as I say at all times. You understand?
Yes.
Good.
Andy cut the leather thong that bound Billy's hands, then the one that tied his feet.
Can you walk?
I'm a little sore.
Here, get on my back. Let's go.
Andy lifted the boy up and carried him in the direction where Steele's the ponies would be waiting. Billy clung desperately to his neck. Andy's brother stood in the edge of the creek, holding four horses. He appeared much relieved.
It took you a long time. I feared you had entered the wrong lodge.
Billy held on to Andy tight.
Don't be afraid. This is my brother.
Billy did not understand that. Andy would explain it to him later, when they were far from here.
Put the boy on this horse. He is one of the best I have. I hope he can ride without her saddle.
He can. He will.
Andy maneuvered Billy over to the horse.
Wait, but my pony is right there.
I'll explain later. This is your horse now.
Steele's the pony swung up onto a third horse. He had a leather rope around the neck of Billy's pony.
Remember, follow the creek eastward. If the spirits are with us, it will be daylight before Fights with Bears knows the boy is gone. I will see that the pony leaves good, clear tracks for him to follow.
Andy felt as if he would choke. The breach between him and the people, already broad, would be irretrievably unbridgeable after this.
You have done a brave thing for me, brother.
But it is the last thing I can ever do for you. With what you do tonight, you have chosen the white man's road. You are no longer Comanche.
It is a hard thing to know that I may never see you again.
Perhaps we will see each other in another world, less troubled than this one. Now go. Do not look back.
Andy did look back once. He saw Steele's the ponies ride up out of the creek, leading Billy's pony. Moving southward, he was quickly lost from sight.
Why are we riding in the water?
So we don't leave tracks.
Your brother leaves tracks.
So they will follow him, not us.
Are you taking me home, Andy?
That's my intention.
They killed Granddaddy Vince.
I know.
He had a watch. It looked like the one you're wearing around your neck.
I'm taking it home, too. Now let's don't talk for a while. Let's just ride.
For 2 days, Captain Burmeister's rangers had patrolled the area, looking for any bands of Comanche. Rusty and Len Tanner rode in front as trackers. Most of this second day, Tanner had said so little that Rusty had begun to be concerned about him. Ordinarily, Tanner seldom gave his jaw much rest. If a bird flew in front of him, he would speculate for half an hour on what kind it was, what it ate, what its mating habits were.
Hey, Tanner, you feeling all right?
Nothing wrong with me. It's you I've been worried about.
Why me?
Because you ain't said nothing about Andy. Yesterday and today, I ain't heard you mention his name.
What can I say that I haven't already said? God only knows where he is or what he's doing, if he's not been killed already.
He's a hell of a man, Rusty. I'm sure he's fine. And if he's in trouble, we'll find him.
Tanner went into another long, unaccustomed silence. He broke it suddenly.
Look yonder. Way up there. Is that buffalo or is it horses?
Rusty squinted against the sun's glare on the waving brown grass.
Looks to me like two horses. Can't tell whether they're coming or going.
I believe they're coming this way. Must be Indians.
We better tell the captain.
Burmeister had halted his detail and was waiting.
We see two horseback riders coming this way. Our guess is that they're Indians. They could be scouting for a larger bunch.
Rusty could see momentary conflict in Burmeister's eyes. They could be scouts, or they could be trying to set up an ambush. But they had to engage. Stopping incursion by Indian raiders was of utmost importance. Burmeister pointed to a shallow ravine carved by runoff water after rare, hard rains.
We hide. We wait.
Rusty and Tanner crawled up over the edge and lay on their bellies so they could see. Rusty caught an occasional glimpse of the riders as they came over a rise, then lost them as they dropped to lower ground.
Still coming toward us.
Sure look like Indians to me. A little one and a big one.
Now, hold on. Let's not be quick to shoot. If they're scouting, there's no telling how far out front they are and how big of a bunch may be following after them.
Sweat seeped from beneath Rusty's hatband and ran down to burn his eyes. He wiped away what he could and blinked away the rest.
Does something about that bigger one look familiar to you, Len?
He sets his horse like Andy.
It is. Everybody, it's Andy, and he's got Billy with him. It's our boys. Don't anybody shoot.
Rusty started forward. The two riders stopped abruptly and seemed about to turn back.
Hold up, Rusty. They don't know who we are.
He took off his hat and waved it.
Hey! Andy! Billy! It's us!
The two riders hesitated a little longer, then seemed satisfied.
Can you see Billy? Does he look okay?
He looks fine for a 6-year-old riding a horse bareback. That is one tough kid for sure.
Tears of relief rolled down his face, leaving tracks in the dust. Tanner reached up and lifted Billy from his horse's back.
Come here, buddy.
Oh, youngin', we was afraid we'd never see you again.
Andy found me. Where's Mama? Where's Daddy?
They're at home. We'll be taking you to them.
Both boys were scratched as if they'd ridden through brush. Billy was badly sunburned, his lips blistered and swollen.
Looks like you need a drink. Here, take my canteen. Easy, Billy. Not all at once.
Rusty felt himself swelling with pride.
Andy, for bringing Billy back, the Monahans would let you live on their farm the rest of your life and never do a lick of work.
All I want is for them to forgive me. And then I'd like to forgive myself.
They were a couple of miles from the Monahan farm when James and Macy burst suddenly and unexpectedly from a grove of trees. Half the rangers raised guns before they recognized that the riders presented no threat. James spurred up, face flushed with excitement.
You found Billy!
He reached out and threw both arms around the surprised boy.
Oh, Billy, there'll be a big celebration tonight. Oh, I swear it was looking like we'd have to bury half the family, start with Billy's mama. How you all get him back?
Andy found him.
Well, I reckon it takes an Indian to know where to look. No offense, man.
The way you came busting out of the timber, we could have shot you.
Well, we didn't know at first, but what you all might be Indians. We've been out looking for sign.
You have seen Indians?
And one for sure. He showed up yesterday evening watching the houses. We've seen him two or three times, but when we go out looking for him, we can't find him. We figure he's scouting us for a war party.
There must be fights with bears. He knew where he found Billy. He knew we'd bring him back here. Most likely he's waiting to try and grab him again.
He ought to know Billy's gonna be guarded extra heavy. He could steal some other boy a lot easier.
Fights with bears had him and lost him. That done hurt to his pride. He doesn't want to settle for some other boy. He wants Billy back.
Well, he ain't going to get him, not as long as there's a Monahan breathing. Now come on, let's get back.
Approaching the corrals, Rusty saw many horses penned there. He assumed that James and the others had gathered as many as they could find and brought them here where they could be kept under guard. He saw several of the Monahan's neighbors gathered at the barn. It appeared that much of the community had come together for mutual protection. Josie was the first family member to see the procession coming.
Geneva! Evan! Mama! They're back! They're all back!
Rusty saw Geneva rush out the door, holding her little girl in her arms. Josie took the girl from her so Geneva could run toward her son.
Billy! Billy!
Mama!
Billy ran to meet his mother. In a minute, the Monahans were all gathered around Billy. Clemmie hugged him, then he was passed to Josie and Alice and Preacher Webb. The boy's father had been in the corral among the horses. He vaulted over a fence and went running to grab his son. Dust had gotten into Rusty's eyes, made them burn. He looked away.
I'll set to work in the kitchen after I speak to Rusty.
Her face shining with tears, Clemmie walked forward to meet Rusty and Burmeister and the others.
Man, there ain't words enough.
Madam, it is to this young man that all thanks should go. Andy found him and brought him out.
Andy Pickard, get down off that horse.
Yes, ma'am.
Sheepishly, Andy complied, looking as if he dreaded a whipping. Clemmie walked toward him and pulled him into a fierce hug.
Oh, God bless you, Andy. God bless you.
I'm sorry about your daddy.
It was God's will. We can't fault the Lord for calling him to his reward, although he deserved a less painful passing.
I got his watch back for you.
He slipped the rawhide loop over his head and handed her the silver timepiece. Reverently, she pressed it to her cheek.
Bless you, Andy. All of you must be tired and hungry. Come on up to the house. We'll fix you a celebration supper.
In a while, madam. First, we must see to the horses.
Geneva released Billy, only long enough for the other family members to hug him again. Then she clasped him as if she never intended to let him go. Rusty wanted to go to her, but could not. Instead, Josie came and put her arms around him.
Oh, it's a happy day you've brought us, Rusty.
It was Andy's doing.
But you brought him here. It's a bitter thing to lose family, Rusty.
I can imagine.
You've been a member of this family for a long time, whether you've realized it or not. And so will Andy be from now on. It takes more than just blood to make a family. It takes love.
She raised up on tiptoes to kiss him on his bewhiskered cheek. Warmth rushed into his face.
Maybe you shouldn't do that out here in the sight of God and everybody.
I'll do it again, Rusty Shannon, whenever I want to. But I'll wait till you get rid of those whiskers.
Though he was offered any bed in the house, Andy chose to sleep on the ground in the ranger's camp near the barn. Rusty knew he felt suffocated by all the attention from the Monahans and their neighbors who had gathered in anticipation of an Indian raid. The rangers, at least, did not fawn over him.
Indians!
Huh?
Everybody up! Indians coming!
Indians?
The sun was just beginning to rise. Rusty cast off his blanket and grabbed for his boots, the only thing he had taken off the night before.
Indians? Where?
Take a look, right northward.
In the dawn's rosy glow, Rusty saw more than a dozen Comanches standing their horses in a rough line. A single warrior moved out 20 yards in front of the others. Andy walked up next to Rusty, his face grim.
Andy, do you know what's going on?
He's making a challenge.
A challenge?
That's fights with bears. He's the one who had Billy.
Well, he's not getting him back. Every last man here would die before they take that boy again.
He's not asking for Billy. He's asking for me.
You?
I shamed him. I stole Billy right out from under him while he was asleep. It's a matter of pride.
You ain't going out there to him.
If I don't, they'll charge down on this place. Now hand me a rifle.
We've got men and guns enough to whip him.
But what'll it cost? I've got people on both sides. I don't want to see anybody dead.
That Indian wants to see you dead.
Maybe he'll settle for something less. The rifle?
Here.
Andy walked straight towards the party, eyes locked on fights with bears. He tried to watch the line of Comanches to the rear as well. If they decided to rush him, he would have no chance. But bears was Andy's immediate concern. The rest were likely to take their cue from him. Bears had no firearm that Andy could see. He held a lance and had a bow and a quiver of arrows slung over his shoulder. Andy had the advantage. His rifle was loaded and cocked. He stopped 20 feet away. Andy felt cold sweat on his forehead and hoped bears could not see it.
I am the one who stole your prize.
You have come armed.
You are armed too.
The lance had a sharp-looking flint point fashioned for killing buffalo. Bears could drive it all the way through Andy's body if he so chose.
You stole the boy that belonged to me.
He never did belong to you. He belongs to his mother and father.
I won him in battle.
It was no battle. You killed a helpless old man and took the boy. They had no chance.
No matter. He was mine. You stole him from me. You owe me something.
A fight? I could kill you before you move.
My warriors would kill you before you drew another breath.
And there are enough white men at this place to kill them all. Who would be the winner? Not your warriors. Not you or me.
You have a good fighting spirit. I would take you in place of the boy.
I would never be accepted. I have killed one of the people. I am told that the one who died was a brother to your wives. They would gladly hack me to pieces.
It is a matter of honor. I must satisfy my honor.
Perhaps you would like to have my scalp.
Your scalp?
Here, I will give it to you.
Andy drew his knife and reached up for one of his braids. His eyes never broke contact with Bear's.
Here's one. Here's the other.
Both braids landed at Bear's feet. Andy retrieved his rifle.
You can have a scalp dance over those.
For a moment, Bear's seemed perplexed. Then he picked up the braids and raised them high. Bears rolled slowly forward and lowered the lance, pointing it at Andy. The rifle felt slick in Andy's sweaty hands. He pointed its muzzle at Bears, his finger on the trigger. One twitch and the Comanche would be dead. The battle would be on. Bears touched a flat side of the lance point against Andy's arm. Then he wheeled his horse around and set it into a long trot back toward the waiting warriors.
Andy, you all right?
I'm not bleeding. if that's what you mean.
I thought he meant to kill you.
He knew I'd take him with me. He didn't want me that bad. So he accepted a piece of my scalp and counted coup. That was enough to patch up his pride.
He's liable to keep trying to get you.
I doubt it. Him and his wives will make medicine with those braids. They'll try to cast spells and send dark spirits after me. But I think that'll be all of it.
The Indians were quickly fading from sight. Rusty looked relieved.
You afraid of dark spirits?
I wish I could say I'm not. But there's still a part of me that wonders.
Don't worry. We'll sick Preacher Webb onto them.
By the next day, the neighbors were dispersing back to their own homes, feeling that at least for a time, the Indian threat was over.
You're looking a little sour this afternoon, Captain.
I just now got this letter. It is from the governor's office that I have received this. The money is gone. We are to disband.
Well, I didn't figure we'd get paid anyhow.
So what'll you do now, Captain?
The letter says there is other work for me. I am to become a judge.
Well, that's better than riding all over hell and gone chasing Indians and whiskey runners.
Perhaps. I am no longer so young. But I liked it, to be a ranger again even for just a little while. Well, what will you do, Private Shannon?
Go back home. I have some unfinished business there.
You will be subject to arrest if you go there.
I'm subject to arrest anywhere. Even here, if the Olden brothers take a notion to come for me again or send somebody. I can't go on forever with a warrant hanging over my head. I want to get things straightened out, whatever it takes.
All I can give you is a wish for good luck. I have not even the money to pay you for the time you have served.
I knew that when I joined up. It's always been that way with the Rangers. One day of side meat and a month of sow belly.
If a character witness you need, send for me. I will gladly serve.
Rusty knew Burmeister's record as a Union officer during the war would give his word extra weight in a Reconstruction court, especially if he were a judge.
I'd be much obliged.
Josie grasped both of Rusty's hands when he told her.
You have friends here who would never let the state police take you away. Stay. The government is bound to change sooner or later.
I can't keep leaning on my friends. I've got to find some way to settle this. I have to try to get back what's mine.
I've told you before, it doesn't matter to me whether you have anything or not.
It matters to me. I've got to set things right.
Even if it means going to jail?
Even that.
She leaned her head against his chest.
All right. I'll keep on waiting.
Holding her hands, he stepped back to look at her.
Josie, you know I get strong feelings when I'm with you. For a long time, I wasn't sure if they were really for you or if they were for somebody else.
You mean Geneva?
He did not answer. He didn't have to.
She's got a life of her own. A husband and two little ones. She's out of your reach. But I'm not. I'm here. All you have to do is ask me.
I know. But I don't have a right to ask you so long as I've got nothing to offer.
I don't need anything. I'd live in a tent. I'd live in a dugout if it was with you. It wouldn't bother me.
It would bother me. I couldn't do it.
Then go. Do what you have to. I'll be here whenever you come back.
Andy was standing by the porch. Something was different about him. Rusty puzzled over it a minute, then realized what it was.
What did you do to your hair?
Alice cut it for me. It looked ragged with the braids hacked off.
You don't look much like a Comanche anymore.
My brother knows me better than I know myself. I am not a Comanche anymore. I am to walk the white man's road, to be true to myself.
You like this place and the Monahans, don't you?
They're good people, but I don't want to stay here while you and Len go back home.
There's no telling what we may run into.
But it's home. At least the nearest thing to home that I have.
I may end up in jail.
Me and Tanner will bust you out.
Aiding and abetting a fugitive is what caused all this trouble in the first place.
So I ought to be getting pretty good at it.
Rusty ached to see the farm where he had spent the larger part of his life, but he knew he must defer that visit until he learned how things stood with him and Reconstruction law. His first destination, then, would be the Tom Blessing farm.